There are 64 million single people in the United States, so it should be easy to find a romantic partner. Only problem is, we're all chicken. We're all afraid of rejection. Everybody wants the other fool to put their ego on the line and initiate contact with us, rather than the other way around. You see, somebody has to make the first move. You know, all day long, as you're walking down the street, when you're in an elevator or at the bank or at the drugstore or the supermarket or the laundromat, you're passing by attractive single people. Secretly, you're attracted to them. Secretly, they're attracted to you. But they're too afraid of rejection to initiate contact with you. You're too afraid of getting your feelings hurt to take a chance and put your ego on the line with them. I call this the ship's passing in the night tragedy. All of these attractive single people, they all want the same thing. They all want romantic love. And nobody has the guts to make contact. How do you overcome the fear of rejection? Because, face it, rejection is what we all have to overcome if we want to find a loving relationship. And the answer is desensitization. It's a $10 term in psychology, and what it means is, whatever you're afraid of, the only way you can overcome that fear is by facing it head on. In other words, if you're afraid of horses because you fell off of a horse in your past, the only way you will ever conquer your fear of horses is by getting back up on the horse. If you're afraid of heights, you have to get back up on the roof. If you're afraid of rejection, you have to go out and get rejected. Again, it's called desensitization, which simply means the more you experience that which you fear, the less sensitive you will be to it. Desensitization. From now on, the next time that you get rejected, say thank you. They're doing you a favor. They're helping you to overcome your fear of rejection. It's kind of like the guy who's learning karate. The first time he hits the brick doesn't break, but it sure feels like his hand did. So what does he do? He keeps on hitting that brick over and over again until eventually he develops a callus on the side of his hand. Now he hits the brick. The callus absorbs most of the pain, most of the impact, and the brick breaks. The same is true for rejection. Every time you get rejected, you're going to be a little bit less afraid of it. You're going to be a little bit more desensitized to the pain of rejection. Now, of course, people always say to me, Rich, it's easy for you to tell us to go out and get rejected. You're obviously a very self-confident, outgoing person. So let me tell you a true story about myself. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I once was the most shy guy in the entire city of San Francisco when it came to meeting women. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a shy person. From the age of 9, I've been accustomed to getting up and speaking before hundreds of people. I'm not a shy person. But I was scared to death of being rejected by women. The first time I ever went out on a date was as a sophomore in college. And it was almost a miracle. I was a student at the University of San Francisco. I was a sophomore. And one day I came out of the classroom and I bumped into a girl in the hallway. And we started talking. And obviously we were attracted to each other because we started flirting. And her class, of course, was waiting to get into my classroom for the next hour. So we used to flirt 5 minutes a day, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I wasn't going to ask her out on a date because I couldn't afford to take the chance on rejection. If she said no, that would have been it, straight to the monastery. My romantic life would have been over before it started. Finally, it was getting to be the end of the semester. Finals were coming up. I didn't know if I'd ever have another golden opportunity like this. So in desperation, I asked her out. Fortunately, she said yes. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be doing this tape today. Now, since that time, I have been rejected hundreds of times by women. And you know, it still hurts. But it doesn't hurt anywhere near as much now as it did the first time. It's called desensitization. Let me give you a homework assignment right now. I'd like you to go out and get rejected more times in the next 6 months than you have in your entire life. Now, for some of you who have never been rejected, who have never once taken a chance and initiated contact, it'll be a pretty easy assignment. You only have to go out and get rejected once, and you've done the homework assignment. Those of you that have been rejected many times, as I have, you're going to have to go out and really get rejected often in order to complete that homework assignment in the next 6 months. Let me tell you what's going to happen the first time you get rejected. You're going to be suicidal. The next time you get rejected, you'll be depressed for a week. The next time you get rejected, you'll be depressed for a day. Each time you get rejected, it's going to hurt. But each time it's going to hurt a little bit less. That's what I mean by desensitization. In fact, if you want to really get over the fear of rejection, why not turn it into a game? Why not play the rejection game? Here's how you play it. Some night, make a decision that you're going to intentionally go out of the house hoping to get rejected. You'll go down to the local dance parlor or the singles bar or some other kind of social situation, specifically with the intent of being rejected. And if you want to increase your chances of getting turned down, you don't have to take a shower that night, you don't have to put on your makeup, you don't have to comb your hair, you don't have to put on your best clothes. Your intent is to set a new Guinness World Record, most number of times shot down in an evening. Now, while you're out there getting rejected, it's important to keep score. And each time you get rejected, award yourself an imaginary purple heart. You have been wounded in the battle for love, and you deserve a medal. The final part of the rejection game is to call up your best friends and brag about all the times you were rejected. Take pride in the fact that you had more courage than anybody else in your town that evening. Now, if you play rejection as a game, rejection can actually be fun. Now let's get into the art of flirting. How do you meet somebody attractive of the opposite sex? And more importantly, once you meet them, how do you get a good conversation going? And finally, how do you get them to fall madly in love with you? We're going to talk now about the art of flirting. We're going to cover it in 10 different steps. The first step in the art of flirting is eye contact. Now, eye contact is just a euphemism. The real word is staring. You have to stare at people. You have to look them in the eye and let them know that you're attracted to them. Let them know that you have the hots for them. The way you communicate that is through eye contact. Now, a lot of people have difficulty with eye contact, especially eye contact with somebody that you find attractive of the opposite sex. This is a particular problem for a lot of women. Usually, the man is the one who initiates contact. And before he's going to walk all the way across the room and talk to a woman and take a chance on having his feelings hurt, usually what he'll do is kind of test the waters with his eyes. What he'll do is he'll try to gain eye contact with a woman that he finds attractive. Now, if she looks away, he's going to conclude that she finds him unattractive, and he's probably not going to walk up to her and start talking. So it's critical that if somebody finds you attractive and looks you in the eye, it's critical that you look them back in the eye. Unfortunately, there are a lot of women out there, and occasionally there are men out there as well, that when somebody attractive of the opposite sex looks them in the eye, they get all frazzled by it, they get really, really scared, really uptight, and they automatically turn away. That's the kiss of death. The chances are very, very slim that the person is going to come over and talk to you if you don't look them back in the eye. So what you need to do is to learn to comfortably stare at the opposite sex. Here's a little exercise that you can do for homework. Choose a friend, or it can be a stranger or an acquaintance, and ask them if they're willing to play a little bit of an eye contact game with you. All you do is you sit down and you stare at each other for a solid minute. Now, the rules are very, very simple. During that minute of eye contact, you cannot look away. You can blink, but you can't look away. You also cannot smile, you cannot laugh, and you cannot talk. See if you can do that for 60 seconds. It sounds like an easy assignment, but most people flunk that assignment. If you find that you cannot stare at somebody for a solid minute without looking away, laughing, smiling, or talking, you have a problem with eye contact. Now you need to start practicing more often. Continue doing this homework assignment until you can stare at somebody for a solid minute without feeling uptight. Once you master this skill of eye contact, you're on your way to succeeding in the art of flirting. Step number two after eye contact is smiling. In fact, a lot of times, steps one and two go together. Often, we look at somebody in the eye that we find attractive, and we give them a big smile. Smiling is critical for three reasons. Number one, you're going to look physically twice as beautiful with a smile on your face as you will without. Any photographer will tell you that the secret of making people look good in photographs is to trick them into smiling. That's why every photographer knows how to get a child to laugh and smile. The other advantage of smiling is that it makes you appear to be friendly. We're not attracted to unfriendly people. In fact, we're afraid of unfriendly people. So if you have a look on your face that's kind of serious, kind of unfriendly, people are going to be afraid to initiate contact with you. They're not going to want to flirt with you. So step number two is to smile at them. That conveys a message to them that you're a friendly person. You're not going to take sadistic pleasure in rejecting them. If they come up and talk to you, you're going to make them feel comfortable. The third reason why you want to smile at attractive people of the opposite sex is because it makes you appear to be happy. Happy people have a tendency to smile. Unhappy people have a tendency to frown. So the happier the expression on your face, the more you smile, the more attractive you will be to the opposite sex. The more people will want to flirt with you. So step number two in the art of flirting is to smile. Now, what do you do if you don't feel like smiling? A lot of times single people tell me, you know, Rich, when I go out to a party or a dance or a picnic and I'm in a social situation, I feel really uptight. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that nobody will find me attractive, nobody will like me, nobody will talk to me, nobody will ask me to dance. You know, it's kind of depressing, it's kind of scary to go out in social situations. Well, if you've got that kind of attitude, you might as well stay at home, because nobody is going to find you attractive, nobody is going to want to flirt with you if you're uptight and unfriendly. So what you have to do is you have to fake it. Here's another homework assignment for you. Ask a friend if they're willing to do a little exercise with you. Just turn to them and flash them the phoniest smile of your life. I know this sounds a little bit ridiculous, but most of the time people can't tell that it's a phony smile. If you go out to social situations with a smile on your face, you're going to be attractive to the opposite sex. You're going to find that it's easy to flirt with them. If, on the other hand, you go out of the house to social situations with a frown on your face or an unhappy or depressed or lonely look on your face, or if you look desperate, nobody is going to find you attractive. In other words, you have to fake it. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of people find when they do this homework assignment, they find that they start out with a phony smile, but eventually it evolves naturally into a natural smile, into a comfortable, honest smile. In other words, your phony smile doesn't stay phony. You know, there's a psychologist out there who did a study that concluded that when we smile, the muscular contractions that we do to our face when we smile actually release endorphins into the brain. Now, endorphins are these chemical substances that cause us to feel happy. So this psychologist claimed that when you smile, you actually make yourself happier. Now, I don't know whether this is true or not, but I just know from my own personal experience that anytime I feel a little bit unhappy or a little bit depressed or a little bit down, if I force myself to smile, even though it's a phony smile, I would say more than 50% of the time I feel happier. Practice that as well as a homework assignment. Sometime that you're by yourself, you're in your car, you're at home or at work, and you're feeling a little bit down, a little bit depressed, practice making a phony smile just for your own benefit and see whether or not you feel happier. Your homework assignment is, whenever you go to social situations, smile, smile, smile. If you do that, you're well on your way to flirting with the opposite sex. Now, what do you do if you make good eye contact and you smile and the other person just doesn't get the hint? You know, there are shy people out there that are going to be afraid to walk up and talk to you. You can smile as much as you like and make as much eye contact and wink at them and drop your handkerchief, but they're just not going to walk over to you and initiate contact. That's where you have to bring up the heavy artillery. You have to move to step three in the art of flirting, and that is you have to say something. You have to use an opening line. Now, people in my classes always ask me for the perfect opening line, the line that is surefire, guaranteed, I won't be rejected. Now, I wish I had a surefire opening line to share with you. Unfortunately, there is none. But what I will share with you instead is the one opening line that never works. So if you avoid this one, at least you have a chance. The one opening line that never works is the non-existent one. In other words, you have to say something, anything, in order to have a chance of getting involved with somebody. The only opening line that never works is the non-existent one. Let me give you an example. Suppose I were to walk up to a woman and say, "Hi, I'm a jerk." Now, this is a dangerous opening line, but it also has the opportunity for success. One of two things are going to happen if I say, "Hi, I'm a jerk." A, she's going to say to herself, "Boy, this guy is great. He has a wonderful personality. He's really witty." On the other hand, she's just as likely to say, "Well, maybe he is a jerk." So it's a high-risk opening line. But if I don't say something, I'm going to lose her. Let me tell you a true story about a friend of mine named Bob. Bob once went to a Chinese restaurant for lunch with a buddy of his. And he looked across the room and he saw this gorgeous woman and he fell madly in lust with her. So he turned to his buddy Vic and he says, "What can I say to this woman as an opening line? You know, she's so beautiful. She's accustomed to guys hitting on her all the time, so I have to come up with something clever. Can you think of anything that you can recommend?" So the two of them kind of scratched their heads a little bit and talked a little bit about different possible opening lines, and they couldn't come up with anything clever. In the meantime, Bob noticed that her fortune cookie had arrived. She would be leaving in about 5 minutes. He would never see her again, and he would probably wind up hating himself for the rest of his life. Finally, in desperation, he said, "Vic, I'm running out of time. I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm just going to walk across the room, and I'm just going to say the first thing that pops into my head." Now, talk about burning your bridges. Talk about courage. So he walks across the room. He arrives at her table. She looks up, and his mind goes blank. He can't even remember his name. Finally, in desperation, he blurted out the first thing that popped into his head, "How can I meet you?" And she said, "You just did. Would you like to join me?" And he did. And they wound up going out together for 3 months. Now, they did not get married, so this doesn't have a wonderful ending. The point is, he got to go out with a woman of his dreams, and he did it without a clever opening line. How many times have you been in a social situation like Bob where you saw somebody attractive, and you tried to think of something unique or clever or funny, and while you're thinking, you run out of time. The person just walks out. Or somebody beats you to the punch. Here's a homework assignment for you. What I would like you to do is to write down an emergency opening line. This is an all-purpose opening line that you can use in any social situation. You can use this at church. You can use it in the classroom, in the elevator, at work, in a picnic, in a bar, at a dance. It doesn't make any difference. It's an all-purpose emergency opening line. It's a line that you can use if you can't think of anything more clever. For example, a good friend of mine, Susan Scott, who teaches classes for singles, when she was single, had a favorite opening line. She'd walk up to a man and say, "Hi, can I buy you a drink, or would you prefer the cash?" Now, Susan made the mistake of using this opening line in Club Oz, which is on the 32nd floor of the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. This is where the cheapest drink is $5. It was a very expensive opening line, but you know, Susan met a lot of guys. A lot of times I like to walk up to women and say, "Hi, I'm rich." Now, I'm not intending a pun with that, but that's a very popular opening line with women. Let me tell you another story, a true story, about a friend of mine many, many years ago when I was living in San Jose. One day we decided to go to one of the most notorious singles bars in the town of San Jose called Cowtown. And I don't know how to describe my friend Pat charitably, so let me just blurt it out. He hadn't taken a shower in a few days. He hadn't combed his hair. He hadn't shaved. He was wearing a tank top, cut-off jeans with the threads hanging down, muddy tennis shoes, no socks. So we arrive in Cowtown, and I'm kind of embarrassed. So I say, "Pat, let's go over here and sit in the dark corner of the room." I was hoping that nobody would notice us. So we looked across the room, and we saw a beautiful woman. And you know, every man in that bar wanted her. And one by one, they walked up to her and asked her to dance. And she shot them all down. Man after man after man was rejected. You know, pretty soon it got to be a joke. You know, people started pointing at each other and saying, "Well, I guess it's your turn to go up there and get rejected." And people would kind of laugh a little bit. And then they'd go up and get rejected. And, you would think that guys would eventually get the message that this woman was not going to dance with anybody, but she was just so beautiful, they just couldn't resist. It was like moths being attracted to a flame. Finally, just about everybody there had been rejected. The only guys that hadn't asked her to dance were either guys who were with their girlfriends or their wives, and even some of them had gone up and asked her because she was so beautiful. So it was down to Pat and myself, and in those days there's no way in the world I would walk up to a beautiful woman and ask her to dance. So finally Pat said, "Well, Rich, I guess it's up to me." And I said, "Hold on a second, Pat. This woman is turning down good-looking, well-dressed guys. Why would she dance with a slob like you?" And Pat said, "I don't care. I'm going to dance with her." So he walked across the room, asked her to dance. 3 seconds later, they were out on the dance floor. Every jaw in that bar dropped. In sheer amazement, this has got to be the greatest opening line of all time. Of course, I was dying of curiosity, but after he danced a few numbers with her, he went back over to the bar and sat with her, and they talked for about 45 minutes. Finally, they ran out of things to say, and he walked over to me and he said, "Rich, boy, I sure enjoy that conversation." And I said, "Well, what did you say to her, Pat?" And he said, "I just walked up to her and asked, 'Would you dance with an ugly man?'" She'd never heard anybody ask that before. She didn't know what to say. So before she knew it, she was out on the dance floor. Then later on, she asked me, "Pat, do you really think that you're ugly?" And Pat answered, "Hell no. But I had to get you off the damn stool, didn't I?" The point I'm making is, you can use risky lines like, "Would you dance with an ugly man?" or "Hi, I'm a jerk." Or you can use common lines. Los Angeles Magazine did a study recently, and they found out that the most popular opening line in the city of Los Angeles is "Hi." So you don't have to be clever. You don't have to say something unique, but you do have to say something. That's step number 3 in the art of flirting. Step number 4 in the art of flirting is to remember their name. Do you often have the experience that I sometimes have? I'm introduced to somebody, and within 5 seconds, I forget their first name. This is a disaster, because the number one thing you can do to offend people is to forget their name. Everyone has, as their own favorite word, their own name. It's the most beautiful sound in the English language. It's critical to use a person's name early on in a conversation. When you first meet somebody, occasionally throughout the conversation, repeat that name. It creates intimacy. It makes them feel closer to you. Try to get close to somebody named Mr. Smith or Mrs. Jones. It's almost impossible to develop rapport and feel close to somebody if you don't use their first name. And of course, it's quite embarrassing to ask somebody 2 or 3 minutes into the conversation, "By the way, what was your first name again?" Or even more embarrassing, what happens if you've just met somebody that you like and you're having a good conversation with them and a friend comes over and all of a sudden you're in the ticklish situation of how do you introduce them to your friend without knowing their first name? So how do you remember somebody's name? The answer is you want to immediately repeat that name as soon as you hear it. In other words, instead of saying, "What's your name?" and they answer, "Susie," you don't want to say, "Nice to meet you, Susie. My name is Rich." If you say, "My name is Rich," you're going to remember the name Rich, but you won't remember Susie's name. It's a lot better to just simply say, "Nice to meet you, Susie," and leave it at that. Now, if Susie wants to know your name, she can ask. And, of course, if you do give your name, there's a good chance you'll forget hers. The key, of course, again, is to repeat the person's name. In fact, the more times you use a person's name early in the conversation, the greater the chance that you will remember it. Now, you don't want to go to the extreme of using their name in every sentence. But on occasion, every couple of minutes, every 3-4 minutes, repeat their name and say, "Well, you know, Susie, it seems like this to me," or, "By the way, Susie, can you hand me a match?" Another trick for remembering people's names is to make an association between their name and another word or another name or another person or some picture in your mind. These are standard memory tricks. For example, if somebody's name is Scarlett, you can always remember Scarlett O'Hara from Gone with the Wind. Use these word association games in order to remember somebody's name. My name, Rich, is easy enough to remember. Just think of money. Step number 5 in the art of flirting is to make them the center of conversation. Everyone has as their own favorite topic of conversation themselves. To give you an example, if you tell me about the hamburger you ate at McDonald's, I'm probably going to be bored. But if we're talking about the hamburger that I had today at McDonald's, that's something of interest to me. Everyone is always more interested in subjects that pertain to themselves than they are in subjects pertaining to other people. If you make people the center of the conversation, if you talk about them, talk about their experiences, they're going to find the conversation to be very exciting and very interesting. They're going to think that you're a brilliant conversationalist because you're talking about a topic which they're fascinated by, themselves. So always make the other person the center of conversation rather than yourself. A lot of times, single people make the mistake of trying to impress somebody else by telling them about how exciting their lives are and all of their experiences. And there's really nothing wrong with that. Certainly, you can be a very entertaining conversationalist if you talk about yourself. But you're missing a tremendous opportunity if you talk so much about yourself rather than talk about them. If you talk about other people, you're conveying a very subtle message, and that is, I'm really interested in you. I'm interested in everything about you. I find all of your experiences to be very exciting or very interesting. And of course, one way to indicate that you are interested in somebody is by asking them questions about themselves. The more questions you ask about themselves, the more you're conveying the message to them, I'm very, very curious about you. Everything about you is of interest to me. That is a tremendous compliment to people. That's really massaging their ego. The more you make people the center of conversation, the more you talk about them, the more you comment about them, the more you respond about their experiences, and the more you ask them to relate things about themselves and open up, the more complimented they're going to feel, the more interested they're going to be in being in a conversation with you. So that's step number 5, make them the center of conversation. Of course, some people are afraid that if you ask too many personal questions, you may offend them. And of course, there is that risk. You know, if you ask somebody so many questions that it becomes almost like a broken record, at some point they may interrupt and say, what is this, 20 questions? Or who do you think you are, a district attorney? So you have to be careful not to overdo this. Like all good things, you don't want to create a conversation in which the only thing you talk about is them and you're constantly asking them questions. On the other hand, the majority of the conversation should be about them. The majority of questions should be an attempt to draw them out to reveal more about themselves. The more you talk about them, the more you ask questions about them, and the less you talk about yourself, the more they're likely to like you and the more they're going to want to be with you. So that's step number 4 in the art of flirting. Make them the center of conversation. Step number 6 is what I call the Edith Bunker technique, and it simply says, stifle yourself. In other words, let them do most of the talking. Here's a homework assignment. From now on, in the next month or two, when you get into a conversation with your friends or with the opposite sex, pay attention to who does most of the talking. The other person should always do the majority of the talking, unless they're an extremely quiet, dull, boring person, in which case, why would you even want to be in a conversation with them in the first place? Generally speaking, most people like to talk. And sometimes the reason they don't talk is maybe they're a little bit shy, maybe they're a little bit unassertive, maybe they're afraid that you're going to judge them harshly, maybe they're afraid you're going to think they're stupid or that they'll offend you with a wrong statement. So you have to reassure them that you are indeed interested in what they say and you do approve of what they say. But the most important prerequisite for getting them to do most of the talking is you have to stifle yourself. Now, you have to stifle yourself on 2 different levels. The first level, and the easier level, is to stifle your words. Here's another homework assignment. It's an exercise you can do anytime you're with somebody attractive of the opposite sex, and that is just learn to shut up and listen. Every once in a while, notice that you're doing a lot of the talking, and just force yourself to stop talking and listen to the other person. The more you do this, the more opportunity you give them to do the talking, the more they're going to like you. The secret of being a good conversationalist is not being a good talker. The secret to being a good conversationalist is to make them a good talker. The way you make them into a good talker is by giving them the opportunity to talk. If you make them the center of the conversation and you ask them questions to draw them out and give them an opportunity to be a scintillating conversationalist, they're going to think you're a fantastic person. Now, the second part of stifling yourself is far harder to do than just stifling your words. You have to stifle your thoughts. How many times have you had the experience that you're quiet, you're letting them do the talking, but while they're sharing something about themselves, your mind is off in left field? Maybe you're meditating about your next appointment, or maybe you're thinking about what will happen next on your date, or maybe you're thinking about your tasks at home tomorrow. Whatever it is, your mind is off on a tangent. Or, conversely, the other possibility may be that what you're doing is you're rehearsing the next thing that you're going to say once they stop talking. You see, there's more to being a good listener than just shutting up. You not only have to stifle your words, but often you have to stifle your thoughts. From now on, experiment a little bit. Start paying attention to yourself in conversations. Pay attention particularly to those times when you're quiet, when you're not saying anything. And ask yourself this question: am I really focusing in and concentrating on what the other person is saying, or is my mind off on a tangent, or is my mind simply rehearsing the next thing that I want to say? Now, there's nothing wrong with catching yourself in the act of not listening. All you have to do is say to yourself, stop, and then return back to focusing to what they're talking about. That's step number 6, stifle yourself. Step number 7 is to agree with them. You know, people are more interested in having you agree with them than they are in learning the truth. I was raised in high school and college debate, where I used to go all over the state to debate tournaments. And I've always enjoyed disagreeing with people and having a discussion with opposing points of view. I even enjoy arguments as long as people don't wind up screaming at each other and insulting each other. But you know, I found out a long time ago that I was in the minority in this area. Most people don't like to disagree. Most people want to believe that they have the truth. And they're not interested in having you point out to them how they are out of touch with the truth. They simply want their beliefs reinforced. Now, this is kind of a cynical thing to say about human beings. Unfortunately, it's very, very true. The thing you have to understand about most single people, and of course, the thing you have to understand about most married people, is that most people have low self-esteem. When you disagree with somebody, most of the time, if they're a typical human being with low self-esteem, they're going to take it personally. They're not going to take it as you simply saying, you know, you're an intelligent person and I like you and you're fine the way you are, but you happen to have a point of view which, in my opinion, is incorrect. They're not going to take it that way. If you disagree with their point of view, they're going to take it personally. They're going to think that you're saying they're stupid or incompetent or bad or wrong in some way. So the more you disagree with people, the more they're going to dislike you. And of course, early on in a relationship, when you first meet somebody, when you're flirting in the first date or the first encounter, or even the first few months of a relationship, these relationships tend to be quite fragile. If you give them one bad experience with you, there's a very good chance there won't be another opportunity to flirt with them. So it's critical that you not antagonize people by disagreeing with them. Find things to agree with in whatever they say. Now notice that I'm not suggesting that you be phony. I'm not suggesting that you shape your views in such a way that they are in accordance with everybody you talk to. Obviously, there are going to be a number of occasions when you talk to somebody you're flirting with that they're going to say something which is diametrically opposed to what you believe. I'm not suggesting that you sell out, for example, and if somebody says that they believe in abortion and you don't, for you to say, yes, I think abortion is a wonderful thing. What I am suggesting instead is you keep your disagreements to yourself. In other words, if they say something that you agree with, say you agree with them. If they say something that you disagree with, rather than challenge them on that and argue the point with them, the wiser course is to keep your disagreement to yourself, unless it's something critical that has to do with your relationship. You certainly have to resolve differences between yourselves in a romantic relationship. The point is, initially when you're meeting somebody or getting the relationship going, when you're still in the flirting stage, that's not the time to work out disagreements. What you want to do instead is to create rapport and create intimacy. And the way you do that is by showing people that you approve of them, that you agree of them, that you have a high opinion of them, that you think they're intelligent people, and that you respect their right to have their point of view. The more you agree with people, the more comfortable they're going to feel with you, and the more they're going to like you. Or to put it to you another way, the more you agree with people, the more they're going to be convinced that you must be an extremely intelligent person, because after all, everything that you believe is what they believe in, and that has to be the truth. So that is step number 7. Agree with people as much as possible when they share opinions with you. Now, sometimes it may be difficult to agree with people. For example, suppose somebody tells you that Ronald Reagan was the greatest president in American history, and suppose you think that Ronald Reagan was a disaster. Well, you can't just come out and say, I hate Ronald Reagan, I think he was a horrible president, he was a disaster for this country. If you do that, there's a very good chance you're going to destroy the potential for a romantic relationship with somebody. On the other hand, you don't want to come out and say, yeah, I loved Ronald Reagan's presidency too, because that's a lie. And you can't have a healthy, intimate relationship with somebody that isn't based on honesty. So the alternative is to ask a question: what is it about Ronald Reagan's 8 years that you like best? And they might give you five different reasons why they like Ronald Reagan's presidency, one of which might be, well, throughout most of Ronald Reagan's presidency, the economy was moving pretty well and a lot of people had jobs. Now, that's a fact. Now, you might argue that not all the jobs were high-paying. You might argue that there were a lot of people in the country that were living in poverty or homeless or whatever, but that's not going to win any friendships for you. If, on the other hand, you agree with their basic point that, yes, indeed, the unemployment rate was low during the Reagan presidency, and, yes, indeed, the economy did have a very long period of prosperity, you're not lying, and at the same time, you're succeeding in flirting with them. You're creating intimacy with them. You're getting them to like you. You're massaging their ego. So that's step number 7 in the art of flirting. Agree with them. Step number 8 is to compliment the hell out of them. Again, I cannot overemphasize the importance of giving people the gift of self-esteem. We live in a society that does everything in its power to destroy our self-concepts. It starts off with our parents, and then it goes on with our teachers and our friends, and later on our bosses and our lovers and our husbands and our wives and our children. Everywhere we learn that we're just not quite good enough, we're constantly being criticized. It's a rare person indeed who grows into adulthood with high self-esteem, considering all of the people out there that are doing everything in their power to destroy our self-esteem. The more you give people the gift of self-esteem, the more they're going to like you, the more they're going to want to spend time with you, the more likely they are to fall madly in love with you and want to spend the rest of their lives with you. Look at it logically. Somebody who has low self-esteem is like a person dying of thirst or a person dying of hunger. These are people who are starving and thirsting for compliments. If they can't get compliments from anybody other than you, they're going to become addicted to you. They're going to want to spend the rest of their lives with you because when they're with other people, they have low self-esteem, but when they're with you, they have high self-esteem. High self-esteem is such an incredible gift that if you provide that to your romantic partners, there's no way in the world they can possibly avoid falling head over heels in love with you. Now, when you compliment people, there are two basic ways to do it. You can do it sincerely or you can do it insincerely, which of course is known as flattery. Incidentally, either method works. The problem with being insincere with your compliments, the problem with flattery is if they at some point discover that you're being insincere, if by chance you lay it on too thick and they start getting suspicious, you're going to lose them as a friend and you're going to lose them as a romantic partner. In other words, flattery is a very dangerous habit, particularly if you're attracted to intelligent people, because the more intelligent the person is, the less likely they are to fall for your flattery. So unless you're attracted to gullible, stupid people who are willing to swallow hook, line, and sinker every insincere compliment you throw their way, be careful, be very, very careful with flattery. The alternative, of course, is to be sincere in your compliments. And that, of course, is the preferable alternative. And incidentally, it shouldn't be hard to sincerely compliment somebody that you find attractive. After all, if you have to struggle to find sincere compliments, why would you want to attract them in the first place? Assuming that you are attracted to them, there must be a number of things about them that you like. Why not share those things with them? Why not give them the gift of self-esteem by sharing to them good qualities that they genuinely do have? If you do that, if you're sincere with your compliments, you're going to find that you're well on your way to establishing a lasting, loving, happy relationship with them. That's step number 8, compliment the hell out of them. Step number 9 in the art of flirting is to be careful with the truth. The truth is a very dangerous thing. Think of the truth like nitroglycerin. It's very, very unstable. It can blow up in your face at any time. Truth is a very powerful weapon. For example, in romantic relationships, what truth can do is it can build intimacy. You cannot have an intimate, loving relationship with somebody without truth. The more honest you are with your partner, the more intimacy you'll have with that person, and the healthier your relationship will be. So it's wonderful to be honest. It's wonderful to share the truth. Unfortunately, there's a negative side to the truth. Remember what we said before, that most people have low self-esteem. A lot of people can't handle certain parts of the truth. Certain parts of the truth are just too devastating for their self-concept. So if you're too honest with people, or if you're honest with people in certain areas that are their Achilles heels, you run the risk of losing them. You run the risk of destroying your romantic relationship. So a key part of the art of flirting, especially early on in the romantic relationship, is you have to be very careful with the truth. You know, in a sense, you have to walk on eggs when you first meet somebody. When you first start talking to somebody, you don't know what their weak spots are. You don't know how strong their self-esteem is. So unless you want to run the risk of losing them right off the bat, you have to be very, very careful. There are certain subjects that may be taboo with them, certain subjects in which they're very, very sensitive, very, very touchy. There are certain things that you can tell one person and they won't be offended, whereas if you told the same thing to another person, they would be utterly devastated, they would get angry, they would walk off in a huff, and you would lose them forever. So be careful with people in the beginning of a conversation when you first met them, and even as you're dating them the first few dates, be a little bit cautious. Be careful with that truth. Now, there are three specific areas of truth that you have to be careful with during the flirting stage. Part number one of being careful with the truth is with negative truths about them. In other words, criticism. Now, a lot of people say that they love constructive criticism, but don't believe them. Unless they have extremely high self-esteem, most people have difficulty with any kind of criticism, be it constructive or destructive. Constructive criticism, of course, is when you criticize somebody, but your heart is in the right place. You're not doing it to hurt them. You're trying to give them some important feedback that will help them to solve their mistake or make their lives work better. Destructive criticism, on the other hand, is where you criticize somebody attempting to hurt them. Unfortunately, both types of criticism can hurt people. Most people do not have the self-esteem to handle direct criticism, no matter how constructive it may be. So be careful with the truth. Be careful with the negative truths that you share with people. The second area of the truth has to do with negative truths about yourself. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Don't volunteer a lot of negative things about yourself. Let them discover your negative qualities by themselves. Usually, they'll be able to figure out what's wrong with you given time. But early on in a relationship, you want to put your best foot forward. You don't want to tell them that in the past you've had difficulty in romantic relationships. You don't want to tell them that you've been unfaithful to your partner in the past. You don't want to tell them that you've had a drug problem. You don't want to tell them that you sometimes have difficulty with your mental stability. Put your best foot forward, and as the intimacy builds, then you can start taking risks and sharing negative parts from your past. And the third part of the truth that you have to be careful with has to do with positive facts about yourself. Be careful that you don't come across as egotistical or braggart. Keep your good qualities to yourself. Show your good qualities through your actions rather than your words. Let them discover through direct observation that you are a wonderful person. The final step in the art of flirting, step number 10, is to develop a positive attitude about flirting. If you have the attitude that flirting is a lot of hard work, that it's painful, that it requires self-discipline, you're not going to be very good at it, and you're not going to flirt very often. You're going to be a shy, wallflower-type person at a party if you don't truly enjoy flirting. So how do you enjoy flirting? The answer is by making affirmations, positive statements about flirting. I'd like you to copy down on a piece of paper the following affirmations and repeat them often, frequently throughout the day. Hopefully, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and frequently throughout the day. Some of these affirmations are, I love flirting. I enjoy flirting. I love to flirt. I'm very good at flirting. I'm very successful at flirting. And other affirmations that you might want to write down are, I am attractive to the opposite sex. I have a great personality. I'm physically attractive. When I flirt with people, I'm doing them a compliment. People love me to flirt with them. People want to get to know me better. These are just a few of the affirmations that you can write down and repeat daily in your life to develop a positive attitude towards flirting. If you follow these 10 steps, you will be very effective in flirting, and you will find yourself to be irresistible to the opposite sex.